Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this month's 1865 podcast. So obviously you'll hopefully have been listening to our match reports over the last few weeks in what has been a little bit of an up and down month for Forest in terms of results and occasionally performances. But we want to welcome you to this podcast and welcome to Reds fans all over the world. And it was nice to see some Ukrainian flags at the City Ground this weekend. In today's show, we'll be talking about the Bournemouth postponement and the fallout from that. We'll be discussing some of those results and performances and what that means for Forest's prospects in the rest of the season. We'll be hearing from Jeremy Davis with the 1865 sketch, and we'll have a giveaway from our friends at The Terrace, and there will be much, much more besides. Let's start by saying hello to this month's panel. So good evening to you, Tom Newton. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
And hello to Stephen Topless and producer Romeo in the background.
Hello, good evening.
And making his debut on our monthly show, we'd like to say hello to Adam, the cycling defender. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
And it's nice to have you here. Now, as I said, let's start off by talking about the Bournemouth postponement. This was a source of much controversy and it got people talking up and down the country because of the nature of the postponement. Now, there's quite a lot to unpick here, but let's just recap what the basic story was, which was it was a Friday evening match which got postponed at 4 o'clock, less than 4 hours before kickoff, when many Forest fans had already arrived on the south coast and many others were already on their way. And Forest have put in a, I don't know if complaint is too strong a word, but they certainly asked the EFL to pay attention to this. The Forest argument cites that it was very convenient for Bournemouth and they wanted the game to be played on the Saturday. Now, Tom, I'm going to come to you first of all on this one. Just firstly, your thoughts on the postponement itself.
I think the time was shocking because Bournemouth's not just around the corner. And football fans, if they got an opportunity to go to a game, we all knew about the weather reports weren't going to be good. But if the opportunity is still going to a game, the football fans are always going to do the best to make it. And apparently, according to reports, they had an opportunity to call it up at 10 o'clock and at 12 o'clock on the day of the game. And they decided not to. And if you look at the pictures from social media, a lot of fans were already down there. And to basically say it's called off at 4 o'clock, I just think the communication and the behaviour of Bournemouth, I think it was shocking and had no regard to the paying football fan who made the journey to go down there. But then Forest tried to have the game the following day and they wouldn't even were not interested in doing that. And I just thought it was just shocking. And as a football club, I'm not saying we're perfect, but I think we would have had a bit of common sense and communicated with the away supporters if it was a Tau place a lot more earlier than, in the day than what Bournemouth did, and it was just shocking, to be honest.
Okay, Adam, just like Tom, you go to quite a few away matches as well. I think Tom's point about it being the fan, you know, we lived through a year and a half of lockdown and not being able to go to matches, and people were saying the game is nothing without fans. But this was a great example of the fans being put last, wasn't it? And Tom talked there about communication. Bournemouth, the EFL, Forest, all were fairly silent on the day, presumably under the rationale that there was nothing to report at that moment. Should there have been better communication from all parties on the day?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I don't think any of us are here sitting saying about, you know, safety and stuff. We're not safety inspectors, are we? We don't know what condition the ground was in. It doesn't always have to be visible to the naked eye. There might be something on top of the stand or something like that. So I think that there's, the game being called off definitely wasn't the issue to most fans. I think the issue was just, you know, people are down there, people pay for hotels. It's, you know, it's not just the 4 hours before kickoff it being called off. It's the fact that people had paid for hotels and, you know, people had drove and got train, and, you know, it's expensive to get down there, isn't it? And I think that, you know, it was poor. It was really, really poor by both sets of clubs for me and the EFL for the communication. I'm sure Forest's hands were tied slightly in the sense that it's not their game. It's not their home match. They don't really probably have an awful lot to say. But I think it is a difficult one. It's not an easy situation to deal with. But I think when you've got, when you hear stuff like the night before, there was speculation, there was rumour. And the condition that it was in with Storm Eunice and that sort of thing, it was never likely to be played on the Friday. So on that Thursday night, I think you probably could have made a decision then. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I'm sure the EFL will look into it.
Okay, Stephen, on that topic then, it strikes me as though the big issue here isn't necessarily whether the ground was safe or not, because as Adam said, unless you're a safety inspector who happened to be at the ground and been able to inspect on the day, then how would we know? The game was called off at the behest of the local safety advisory group. So it's not just the club, it's not just the football authorities, it's the council and so on as well. The big problem here is actually that with a red weather warning, the EFL have no provision to call off a match on the basis of a weather forecast.
That is a problem. And it comes back to Tom's point. If there's a chance of a game going ahead, fans will travel. We know that. That is just how football fans are. So I think as the EFL, you've almost got to take the decision out of everybody's hands and say, if there's a red weather warning in an area where a game is scheduled to be played, just cancel the game or postpone it for however long, 24 hours or until both teams can agree on a new date, and just be clear with it, because you've had, first of all, the Forest team have gone down there in good time. They were down there on the Thursday ready and willing to play the game. Forest fans have travelled down in the midst of a storm and put themselves at risk. Now, you can argue individual choice on that or not, but that's a fact. And this could have all been avoided with simple and clear communication much earlier on. And the EFL, yes, they probably should create some kind of clause now where if a game is scheduled to take place with red weather warnings around, that game is cancelled, postponed, moved to whatever necessary to take away the risk and still ensure that the game can be played. Because we saw up and down the country on the Saturday, more or less every fixture went ahead. I think there were a few that were called off either due to storm damage or poor weather still hanging around. But most of the games on the Saturday were played. And of course, were it not for Sky's intervention with this match, moving it to the Friday evening, this game would have been on the Saturday and probably wouldn't have been a problem at all. And it might well have been able to go ahead.
Okay. I mean, let's just point out that according to the safety advisory group, one of the problems wasn't just that there was damage to the ground, but also that they couldn't send an engineer up there in safety to actually inspect it. So there's every chance that the match wouldn't have been able to be played on the Saturday anyway. That's the official argument. So with that in mind, coming back to you, Tom, is it reasonable for Forest to make a complaint saying it was convenient for Bournemouth to cancel?
I would have put a complaint in because I thought, oh, and what's actually happened with the, just this, like we've mentioned, but the sheer lack of communication and total disregard to anybody related to Forest, because Stephen says, the team were down there, the fans were down there, and because they didn't have any interest of playing it on a Saturday for whatever reason. So yeah, I think Forest were like ready to fulfill the picture, and they were, Bournemouth wasn't for whatever reason. So I think they've got every right to complain of how much messing about and given to everybody related with the game in terms of the Forest perspective.
Yeah, and Adam, just to come back to you on this one before we move on, I'm just thinking about the fact that what Stephen said, that if the game is likely to go ahead, then fans will travel. And yeah, you could argue personal choice, but I know that if I've spent north of £100 on a match ticket plus a tank of petrol or a train ticket, and then you've got to factor in food, people who've booked accommodation. So in some cases, people have spent £200 for a match that they couldn't go to. And with that in mind, I'm also going to talk about our neighbours over the river, because they've had this ridiculous situation with Dover and going down to Dover and the match being called off, late on. But this is very different, isn't it? Because in that one, Dover basically changed their minds. In this one, Forest were just waiting and waiting and waiting. And surely it was out of Bournemouth's hands as a club, whether it could be played on the Friday and or the Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was out of Bournemouth's hands. But I think, like, we come back to the communication point, it needs to be communicated better to both clubs and the fans, you know, as soon as possible. Because, you know, it's a long way down there. And obviously we've got, I saw the announcement that Forest said that they'll put on coaches for people to go to the return fixture. Well, the return fixture is now a Tuesday before you play Hull on the Saturday. That's an expensive week for a lot of Forest fans. And it's frustrating for me, because it seems as if there's not been a lot of consideration for the fans here. In the Notts County scenario with Dover as well, there was no consideration for the fans whatsoever. You know, you're talking two very, very long away trips. And if Bournemouth had any inkling that the game wasn't going to go, I know they've said, and I know there's a lot of publications come out and said, oh, we wanted the game to be on, we were desperate for it to be on. But take that out of it for a second and just postpone it on the Thursday. There was every bit of concern for the Thursday. They had the red weather warning anyway. Just postpone it on the Thursday. Save some people's money at the very least and just postpone it for another time. People would be disappointed, but at least you can't say the club didn't give you enough warning. I think that's all that people ask for. And if the EFL can step in and maybe put something into place saying the game has to be called off 24 hours before where possible, then I suppose we can sort of go with that, really.
So, and on top of that, the financial implications of the football fan. I mean, fans in this country just get crapped on by television companies, stupid times. The train services in this country aren't great in regards to a football fan. And then you've got to, on top of that, you've got to have half days off from work and this, that and the other. And the people who are who run football in this country, the EFL, the FA, etc. This says, oh, we've really missed the fans and everything. And as soon as the fans come into football grounds after the COVID, and it's like, oh, we want your money and everything, but they don't think about what the football fan has to do to follow their side in terms of money, travel, this, that and the other. And like Adam says, it's on a Tuesday night now. And it's like, a lot of people would have made plans, final away game of the season against Hull. And it's like, you've got to try and find that money. And you've got, obviously, financial costs in terms of the household bills are going up. And it's just, I just think we'll just get hoarded around in this country in terms of how we're treated and everything. And we're really like bottom of the pile when it comes to being classed as citizens in this country following a football club. That's my personal opinion of it.
Yeah, so hopefully with these cancellations, I think, I can't remember which match it was. I think there's one on the Saturday, which was cancelled 45 minutes before kickoff as well. And I'm just thinking that surely this has to bring about some kind of regulation change whereby, I mean, a red weather warning is a threat to life, isn't it? And therefore, it's not reasonable to suggest that fans and, in fact, the players and the teams and all of their staff should travel in those circumstances, because it is do not travel, basically. So we'll see what comes out of that. And thank you, everyone, for your thoughts on that. But let's move on, because we've got a lot to talk about and we've got a lot of results to talk about. So since we did our last monthly show, which was all the way, is about 5 weeks ago now, and the matches have been coming thick and fast. And on the whole, things have been good. So we had the victory against Derby, which we had a podcast special match report for. We had a 3-0 against Barnsley, which was a bit of an odd one, because they say there's no such thing as an easy match in the Championship, but actually Barnsley at that time probably were, and we didn't play very well, but we still got a handsome victory. We obviously had the cup victory against Leicester. We had the win away at Blackburn, and more recently we drew 2-2 with Stoke. We had the 0-0 at Preston, and we had the 2-0 victory just this weekend against Bristol City. Now, I missed out the Cardiff match there, because I want to talk about the Cardiff match and the Preston match. And Stephen, let's talk about those matches, because those were signs that the consistency of both performance and result that Forest had had since Steve Cooper has took over, that consistency has just... it's faltered slightly, hasn't it?
Yeah, those two games, I think, were examples where the performance dropped off, and as a result, the scoreline didn't favour Forest in the end. Cardiff, well, we talked about the goal on the match report, the first goal which gifted them the lead, with Cook and McKenna getting caught out at the back, not really dealing with the threat properly, and real goal down to a Cardiff side who had just brought in a raft of new players, and they all probably had a point to prove. And they made life difficult for us on the night in Cardiff, and it showed. We struggled to find a way through. And even though we scored late on, it was late on, and there wasn't really enough time to turn the game around. Preston, obviously, was a better result and a very decent point in the circumstances. But again, that was an example there where the performance levels had dropped, and we struggled against a team who sat in against us and played deeper, and we couldn't find another way through and another way of creating opportunities. And it was only in the final few minutes when we got going and became more of a threat. But again, by that point, it was too late. So examples there where teams have made life difficult for us, and we've struggled to combat that and find a different way of winning or different way of getting a positive result.
Yeah, so Tom, I'm just going to come to you, because I think there's a little bit of a feeling, possibly for the first time since Cooper has took over after the Preston match, just a little bit of pessimism that seemed to be just a mood of pessimism on fans on social media. And I know social media isn't most reliable place to get opinions, but I haven't seen that for quite a while. Did you pick up on that, and what did you feel? Did you worry that maybe that lack of consistency is becoming a problem?
Slightly. During the second half of the Preston game, a lot of fans were crying out for a substitution. Why isn't Steve Cooper making a substitution? And it didn't happen, and for whatever reason, I just think, you know, sometimes you watch a match and I think, or whoever you change, bring off, or whatever, it's not going to really improve anything on the night. It's just one of those games where just stay in the game and just try and get out with a point, which we did. And then a lot of people were like pessimistic, thinking, oh, we're not going to get in the playoffs now, the gap's too big, and this, that, and the other. Then come Saturday, what we've just had, Middlesbrough lost, and it's closed that gap again. And we've still got, what, 13 games to go? So it's not over by any stretch. But it'd be nice to get into the playoffs. And if there's a chance there, you go for it. But if we don't, I won't be too aggrieved because of the start what we've had was bottom when Steve Cooper took over, and it's just been really easy on the eye watching the games since he's come in. So I think it's just a matter of building something now, and in which we haven't built anything for years. We've got a manager who's got the fans on side, and everybody seems to be singing from the same hymn sheet. So if we don't get into the playoffs this season, we've got something to build on, rather than last season where, well, the season before was in the top six for the majority of the season, dropped out, Houghton come in, and it was just a matter of keeping heads above water last season. And then this season, it's just a matter of, well, we've got Houghton out and Cooper's just got a smile on everybody's faces. So, yeah, if we don't get in the playoffs, it's just one of those.
I don't want to stir the pot too much, but obviously Derby have got their 21-point deduction, and that's a whole other story. But effectively, Forest had a 20-point deduction because the first seven matches, we lost six of them, so and drew the other. So it wasn't a great start. So for Forest, as you say, Tom, to be even in the running for the playoffs is outstanding when you consider it. And I think people have sat up and took notice. Adam, why do you think that consistency is lost? Do you reckon that's down to a bit of fatigue? Do you reckon it's down to disruption in the squad with injuries like Graben being the obvious one and so on? Or is it that occasionally it's just something that happens over the course of a long season?
I just think it's the Championship. in an honest answer. Like, I think, you know, we can't go and win every game. You know, we can't play pretty football every game, but I think that a good team can pick up points when they don't play well. I think, you know, like, for example, the Stoke game, I firstly think Stoke were probably just about the better side, and we managed to get some out of that game, albeit in, you know, last-minute circumstances. Obviously, the Preston game was just a very flat performance, and I think that Preston had a few big chances to win the game, but The difference Lewis Graben makes potentially is that when Jed Spence gets into the box, hits the byline, puts that ball across, Lewis Graben is on the end of that because that's the sort of player he is. And I think that that's the difference on that day that we get 3 points, you know. But I wouldn't be too worried. I think we are going to drop points. We are going to, you know, draw games. You know, we're going to lose games. But since Steve Coop came in, I mean, I saw something the other day that would be second in the league based on just his results. So, you know, it's, and I will probably get called very over optimistic for this, but the league is so open. You're looking at that top 10 even, it's so open at this point in time. And I'm not going to rule out us pushing for the top two. It sounds ridiculous, but there's no consistency for any of the teams up there. All the teams up there are dropping points, different teams. That's the nature of the Championship. But I feel like this season, like Middlesbrough getting beat 3-2 by Barnsley at the weekend, you're not expecting that. So I think it's just keep calm, pick up points where you can. If you're not playing well, just get a point. If you can win games, go and win games and just see where we can get in the next 12, 13 games, really.
Yeah, and I think that there's something to be said for the fact that all you need to do, if you're a team at any position in the Championship, is get two results in a row, good or bad, and you'll find yourself in an entirely different position. And actually, as well as the playoff positions, we can look at how West Brom, I think they're currently bottom in the bottom half of the table, which is astonishing after losing a few matches and not getting results. You look at Derby, who were on course to have the great escape, and now they're on course to finish bottom again because Reading got two results in a row and Barnsley have now got two or three results in a row. And going back to that idea that any team can beat any team, well, Barnsley versus Middlesbrough, no one saw that coming, I don't think. I don't think even Barnsley would have seen that coming. So let's just come back to the topic. Stephen, one of the things that we have noticed is in the matches where Forest have been stifled, it's been down to, and Baz and I discussed this in the match report from the Bristol City match, it's been down to teams pressing high against us and also, in a lot of cases, doubling up on Johnson and Spence on our right-hand side. And Cardiff, in particular, Middlesbrough did it as well on Boxing Day, and Preston did it just last week. So does that mean that actually we've been found out a little bit?
When you've had a run like we have, teams will start to notice you. And I think there have been a few instances where teams have found a way of stifling our threat, particularly down the right-hand side. You've got Johnson and Spence, two explosive players who, in tandem, can be unstoppable. And I think Bristol City, they didn't double up quite as much. They didn't target that side. And the pair of them were just rampant throughout the game. So we kind of have to expect teams to try and attempt to stop them. But that's where the rest of the team has to step up, and the threat needs to come from other areas. So looking at the left-hand side, Max Lowe, who actually I think is quite decent going forward, it opens up an opportunity for him to be more involved. And we saw a goal against Stoke that he set up for Brennan Johnson after the ball comes to him from Sam Surridge. He puts a fantastic ball in. Johnson runs onto it and it's a lovely goal. And we need a bit more of that from Max Lowe. I probably would like to see as well Philip Zinkonagel involved a bit more, offering threat from the left-hand side. If we do find ourselves struggling, particularly with Johnson and Spence, if they're being marked out of a game, and we probably would like to see a bit more coming from the left-hand side in that regard. But with Steve Cooper, I kind of back him to be reactive in these situations. I think he's shown already in his short time in charge that he can change a game, he can understand what's going on the pitch and how to change it. One of the big criticisms of his predecessor was that he couldn't really change a game. He would only stick to one plan and bring on like-for-like substitutions, whereas I think Cooper has been more proactive and a bit more switched on when it comes to making subs and finding ways to change the game, tweaking the tactics slightly to shift focus to a different area of the team and change things up. So I think with Cooper in charge, we've every chance of still carrying on and getting results we need, even if we're not quite on it 100% in games.
Yeah, and of course, we're recording this on the day that Marcelo Bielsa has left Leeds, who is, in my mind, one of the greatest coaches of all time in any country, never mind in this country. And he's fallen foul of the fact that he is too rigid in his way of playing, and he's not really able to come up with an alternative style or an alternative tactic. So that's something. And on that topic, Tom, Brennan Johnson and Jed Spence have been the players getting the headlines. But are they marked men now? We've seen teams trying to double up on Spence. And you know what? He was good enough yesterday after the early booking for the Bristol City left back to just absolutely torment them. But then the other thing, there's this whole idea again that Brennan Johnson's a bit of a marked man with referees and players trying to goad him into what they think is a dive. Now, let's just be clear. The booking yesterday wasn't actually for diving. It's for descent. But then Dean Ashton on the Quest show was saying he shouldn't be doing that. So, what do you think, Tom? Are Johnson and Spence marked men?
Yeah, but I think it all comes down to who they're playing against, because Preston under Ryan Lowe, there'll be quite a disciplined side. So then when we saw against Bristol yesterday, they were marked, but they got away from the man, and the left back for Bristol got booked. So if you like pin them back and put them on the back foot, then you can get some success, I think, even though if you are marked, because if you get past them and they hack you down, well, they only can do that probably no more than two times again, and they could get a red card, you see. So I think they are marked, but I think it just goes to if they keep persevering and everything, I think they will get a break like other areas of the field. But going with the penalty, I mean, the one on Tuesday against Preston, I mean, if the referee doesn't think that's a penalty, book Davis. But he didn't. So
but Brennan didn't get booked in the City match for a dive either. So,
no, but so, I mean, in previous games, he has been booked, hasn't he? And mm-hmm. It comes back to the age-old subject of consistency with officials in this league.
I will just also add that having watched just the highlights from the Quest show, but the referee in the Bournemouth Stoke match, we complain about inconsistency, but that was one of the most one-sided refereeing displays I've ever seen. And when that actually comes across that way on an on a neutrally edited football show, then I think that that tells a real story, doesn't it? Adam, just very, very briefly, if we can, one of the things that we talked about there is, even if we don't make the playoffs, this season has been a success. Does it worry you that, and we may come back to this a little bit later on if we have time, but does it worry you that if we don't make the playoffs, we stand to lose four or five of the current first team?
Yeah, of course. And I think that, you know, it's bound to happen. Do you know what I mean? And like, obviously, Brennan, I think if we don't get in the playoffs and, you know, obviously don't go up this season, I think Brennan will probably leave. Obviously, we're not going to keep Jed Spence. I think if we go up, maybe, but it's still a maybe because I still think that he's going to have Premier League interest from higher up the Premier League table to where we'd probably be. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of players that are going to be leaving if we don't get in the playoffs and we don't go up, but I'm not worried about it in a way because I trust the recruitment model. I trust the players that are going to be brought in. You know, players like Keenan Davis and Max Lowe, I think you'd have a good chance of signing them on a permanent deal. And obviously the money that they're talking about obviously would bring in, you know, we'd be able to bring in three or four very good players for that.
Okay, we'll come back to that a little bit later. Thank you very much, Adam. But now it's time to go over to Jeremy Davis.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The 1865 sketch by Jeremy Davis. Acceptable shithousery is a concept that has emerged in football in the past decade. It's a bedfellow of sledging in cricket, trolling in podcasting, or the rather more genteel gamesmanship, as they refer to it, in the tennis at Wimbledon, where you won't hear the term shithouse, except possibly in relation to Novak Djokovic. At Forest, the term goes back much further, because, of course, shithouse was one of Brian Clough's favourite terms of endearment, applied to players including Kenny Burns, before being affectionately bestowed upon penalty-saving maestro Mark Crossley. These days, the term has entered the lexicon of football to such an extent that The Guardian publishes lengthy articles pontificating on it, and it seems to be the case that it's anything just the right side of the laws of the game so that you don't get booked for it. And most respectable pundits seem to think that it's brilliant. This just goes to show how fast things change in football, because as recently as 2018, said newspaper was describing players feigning injury or going down clutching their faces after someone had brushed against their shoulders as shithousery. And we all know how us Brits feel about simulation. The poster boy for shithousery, acceptable or otherwise, of course, is Jamie Vardy. So it's appropriate that my favourite bit of acceptable shithousery this season came in the second half of Forrest's sensational win against his Leicester team in the FA Cup fourth round. It isn't hard to name the standout moments from that match. Four goals, for one thing, but then there was Keenan Davis's volley in the first half. Martin Keown making himself look stupid by banging on about how Leicester were getting on top until it got to 3-0. But my personal favourite came midway through the second half when the scoreline was at 3-1, and James Maddison ran through on goal and shot wide. Why? Well, if you looked at the advertising hoardings behind the goal as he shot, you could clearly see the message, hashtag aim for goal. Now, I accept that it is overwhelmingly likely that this was mere coincidence, but at the same time, it felt like a glorious piece of shithousery. A bit like that thing when the crowd goes before a dodgy keeper takes a goal kick. As an image, it's wonderful. Misleading, maybe, but one of those you would just love to be true. It belongs up there with the famous shot of Maradona against the Belgians in the 1982 World Cup, when it looks like he's dribbling at six of them, whereas in fact the ball has just broken from a free kick and the wall is breaking up. In a way, I suppose, it could be said to reflect how easy it is to manipulate the truth in these days of fake news. A handy metaphor for both the current geopolitical situation and for the state of UK politics in recent times, where, even in this high-definition 4D surround sound era, a single still image, whether of a bacon sandwich or a PM in a Santa hat with a glass of bubbly, can make or break a career. Let's just hope this particular image doesn't have the same impact on James Madison, even if another thing he has in common with the Prime Minister is being caught carousing when he shouldn't have been, more than once over the past couple of years. Jamie Vardy, the poster boy for acceptable shithousery, may have had a party or two, but his talented midfield teammate is the one who had Partygate.
Thanks once again, Jeremy. It's lovely to hear your voice. Now, to our regular listeners, you may have noticed something a little bit different in the way that our podcast is presented these days. We have always brought you this podcast for absolutely nothing. We've never charged you a penny for it. But because we do this podcast for free, what we've decided to do is we have joined a podcasting network called the Sports Social Podcast Network. And this does mean that you will hear occasional adverts on our podcast. If you want to find out more about your advert choices, there is a link in our show notes to find out a little bit more. Now, we hope you understand why we're doing this, and we hope it doesn't disrupt your enjoyment of the podcast. While we're talking about supporting a podcast, we just want to have a quick word about FanHub. Now, FanHub have introduced some really positive rewards now. So as well as the chance to win surprise football shirts, bobble hats in your club's colours. And also they've got beer vouchers now for checking in at a match and then sharing your check-in on Twitter. And just to look at our current FanHub leaderboard, well, Forest are 17th in the overall club leaderboard. Bournemouth are at the top of the leaderboard. Presumably it's easier for them to check in on match days when their matches actually go ahead. And then above us in the Championship, the only other team who's above Forest is Coventry City. And the rest are mainly League One and League Two clubs. On the fans leaderboard for Forest, that's where we have, in third position, Dan Russell 07. In second position, we've got JB Radders. And in top position, we've got Joel Russell 07. So well done to you guys. You're obviously looking at your news feeds. You might even be listening to this podcast through the FanHub app, and you're obviously checking in on match days. So good for you. And then finally on this topic, you may have noticed as well over the season that we have a deal with our friends at Terrace. And the Terrace have just tweeted this evening that Carl and Craig from their team, they're running 100 kilometres each this month in order to raise money for Mind. So go and check out on our Twitter feed or on their Twitter feed, The Terrace Life, to find out a bit more if you want to support them. But they're also supporting us, and we'll tell you how in just a minute. We as fans have all enjoyed Forest using Just Can't Get Enough to celebrate our FA Cup and league victories. It's a song that's actually over 40 years old, and it was famously the last one to be written by Vince Clarke before he left Depeche Mode and went off to form first Yazoo and later Erasure. Now, because the Terrace have kindly supported us, we've got some Forest mugs. So mugs in Forest colours. We've got a range of these to give away over the next few months. We've got the Dayglow yellow and orange away kit. We've got the blue Labatt's kit. We've got other kits from the 90s. We've got the red home shirt. And we're giving away three mugs this month. And in order to put yourself in the chance of winning one of these mugs, we've got a question for you to do with Depeche Mode. So, according to the UK official charts company, what was the highest chart position that this song managed on its initial release? So it was released in, I think, October 1981. What was the highest chart position that Just Can't Get Enough reached in the official UK charts? Now, email answer to forestramble@gmail.com by 6 p.m. on Friday, the 4th of March, and we will announce the winner over the weekend after the Sheffield United game. So once again, that question, to win a Forest branded mug courtesy of the Terrace. According to the UK official charts company, what was the highest chart position that Just Can't Get Enough managed on its initial release? So email forestramble@gmail.com by 6 p.m. on Friday, the 4th of March. Okay, so that's our competition for this month. And I want to talk about kits. Stephen, what's your favourite kit that Forest have got this season out of the three? The goalkeeper's jerseys as well, I guess.
The goalkeeper's ones are very nice. But it is the fluorescent orange and yellow for me. The kit, it's unique to begin with, but also it's become a bit of a good luck charm for us this season. We've won so many games on the road wearing it. And we're wearing it to a point where we would wear our red home kit on the road, we're choosing to wear this one instead. So clearly the players, the management see it as a good luck charm, and it's got the potential, this one, to go down as an iconic Forest kit in the future, particularly if this season turns out to be a memorable one in terms of promotion or we go deeper into the FA Cup. I think this kit has the potential to be a cult classic in years to come.
Oh, steady on, Marjorie. What about you, Tom? Which is your favourite kit this season?
I do like the fluorescent one because it's a bit different. But no, the home one this season, I just think it's just nice, neat, traditional home shirt for you, so, which I've got upstairs. So yeah, I do like the home shirt. So even though Stephen's mentioned about the fluorescent one, I'll go for the home one and be a traditionalist.
Well, like you, Tom, I think what the listeners can't see, but you can, is I've got the current home shirt hanging up just behind me at the moment. Stephen, if I remember rightly, I think you're the shirt that you purchased this time around is the navy and pink away, isn't it?
I've got the navy and pink away, and I did also manage to get a fluorescent one. So I think I was swayed by the positive results in it. But I actually think the blue and the pink on that away kit is very nice. It's a nice colour combination. And again, something a bit unique and a bit different this season. I think there's a case for all three, actually. They're all, I like the home kit harking back to sort of 89-90 Shipstones kits and the Umbro design of that time, which is nice as well.
Okay, well, I mean, certainly the navy and pink hasn't been worn as much as we might have expected. Adam, what's your choice of kit for this season?
Oh, it's definitely the luminous one. 100%. There's no doubt for me. I like a bit of an out there kit. I always think we've gone quite safe with kits, like, recently, and I think it's nice to get, like, a luminous one. It's like a Marmite kit. You know, it's similar to the mid-90s one that's just been re-released, the yellow one with the Forest thing on it,
which is one of the mugs we've got from the terrace, by the way, listener.
That's a great segue. yeah, definitely the luminous one. They're all nice though. I think Macron have smashed it with our kits, to be fair. I don't think any of us can complain about Macron over the years.
Okie doke. Tom, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, the goalie tops, I wouldn't buy one, but I think you can only buy two in the club shop. I think it's the blue one and the silver one. But in recent weeks, I don't know if anybody's noticed that Bruce Sanders wearing a bit of it's like a white one, and you can't buy that in the club shop.
This is not available in the shops, no. Okay, I just want to, I mean, Stephen, you pointed out that the yellow and orange is unique, and Adam, you say you like it, and oh, Siri's getting very excited by this. Sorry about that. So, yeah, Adam, you're pointing out that you really like it. And I wonder if there's a bit of a generational thing there, because as the youngster on this podcast, you like it. And as the old person on this podcast, I don't. So, but having said that, Stephen, you made a very good point, which is it has become a bit of a good luck charm. Now, I'm just going to throw something out here. And Tom, I'm going to come to you because I'd like your opinion on this. The luminous kit lost its unbeaten run. We hadn't lost a match until we wore it at Cardiff. And then we had a poor performance at Preston. And both of those matches were matches where there wasn't any kit clash. We could have worn red, white, red, and we didn't need to change the kit. So is that a sign that basically if you're fanny about, you get what you deserve?
Yeah, I'm not really superstitious when it comes to kits, really. I just think you just wear what you need to wear on the day, kind of thing. And I think there's a lot more than just the look of the kit. So I think it's just coincidence.
That fun, Stephen. Come on my side here.
I'm all for the fluorescent kit, but yeah, don't mess around. If you can wear your home kit away, just do it. No points.
On that topic, though, away at Birmingham and away at QPR, when there was a shorts clash, we still wore red, white, red. And then since then, we've always worn the yellow one if there's any kind of clash, because we don't. Football League rules change this season, so teams are only allowed three sets of shorts. So wearing all red, like we have done in previous seasons, hasn't been an option. We had a shorts clash at Birmingham QPR. In other matches, we've worn the yellow to overcome that. And against Cardiff and Preston, we didn't need to, and we did. So discuss.
I just, when it comes to kits, I do like keeping it simple. Just if you don't need to change, then don't bother. And in previous years, I think we've, for example, the luminous kits would only be worn against a team like Crystal Palace or somebody like that, where they've got a red and a blue in their shirts, because we've had quite a few blue or navy away kits down the years. And then that would be where a third yellow kit or something would come into play. I'm just wondering, actually, if and when we'll ever see the blue kit again, because the yellow one has become the away kit of choice. And I suppose really it's not going to offer too much of a clash with any kits that we could potentially come up against. Also, just a little point on that, it was worn at Huddersfield. Away, mm-hmm. Would we have needed it at Huddersfield, potentially? I don't know, but it definitely kick-started... Shorts clash again.
But we could have worn the navy because Huddersfield's stripes are light blue and white, so we could have worn the navy and pink there, just like we did at Swansea. Tom, you're wanting to come in on this one.
Yeah, can you remember when we played at Sheffield United in the FA Cup in 2015? And that was an absolute mishmash of a kit.
I'd rather forget the whole thing.
I've just got it up on my phone, and it's the predominantly white and blue Adidas shirt with Fawaz on the front, with red shorts and red socks.
Because Sheffield, they added the red, even though the white and blue wouldn't have clashed anymore if they'd worn the blue shorts and...
Well, Sheffield United on the day were wearing, obviously, the normal home shirts, black shorts and white socks. And I'm just looking at it now. I don't know if you can see it. It's absolute...
Listener can't see, but they can certainly Google image if you don't remember it, yes, it was horrific, and therefore we deserve to lose.
Yeah.
Adam, are you suspicious when it comes to kit etiquette?
Not really, but I think it's one of my biggest disappointments of this season that we lost the unbeaten run in the luminous kit. I think that was the most saddening part of that, the Cardiff game, to be honest, that we lost the unbeaten run. I think there's still magic in that luminous kit, and I think we'll wear it on Friday and hopefully get a result in it.
Yeah, we lost the unbeaten run in a match where we didn't need to wear the kit, so that's the frustrating bit for me. Anyway, we said we'd come back to talking about the team and the squad and everything. So just briefly, Tom, you were dying to say something, and we had to go to Jeremy. So what was it you were hoping to say?
It's just in recent seasons when we've sold certain players, we've never replaced them adequately. With Dane Murphy and the recruitment guy from Stuttgart, I can't remember his name, if anybody can help us out on that one.
Syrianos.
That's him, yeah. I just think they've got like a bit of a plan now. So if we do lose Spence, hopefully they've got somebody else lined up. If Brennan Johnson does leave, I'm just listening to David Johnson on the Garibaldi Red podcast, I've just got a suspicion that he might not go this summer. It won't be his decision to leave the club this summer. It might be the club think we need money for you or whatever. But I haven't got a problem with Forest selling players. It's just in the past they haven't replaced them adequately. And it's just one of those things in football when you're in the Championship and the club we are, we do have to chop and change in terms of personnel. But if we get players of a decent standard and build on it, then I won't be upset about it.
So, Stephen, on that topic, that idea about the manager bringing in his own players, I mean, we saw Rodrigo Ely leave, and we've talked about that already in the Transfer Window podcast, which is still available in your feed, listener. But we've also got players who, like Richie Larrier, We've got Jonathan Panzo. Actually, I'm even going to include Loicon Baso in that. Players who have been brought in, and we've barely seen a sniff of them. So do you reckon there's still some disconnect there, or am I just being overly pessimistic?
In the case of Mbeso, Panzo, players of that, you know, players who've come in and haven't been able to really get into the team, I actually think that at the moment is a product of we're playing well and getting results. So there's no need to change a winning formula. The back three, I think anybody would struggle to break into that back three. It's as good as anything in the league. McKenna, Worrell and Cook are all performing well, and as a unit, they all work really well together. So it's unfortunate for Panzo, if he's fit and ready to play, that he can't get in. You've also got Toby on the bench, who has got plenty of championship experience, and he can't get in. I think it's a nice problem to have, because it shows that actually we're playing well and players are earning the shirts and they're keeping it when they're performing well.
So we need to end that discussion there. And let's go over to another game of Guess That Red.
1865, Guess That Red.
Okay, to regular listeners, you will be familiar with our game Guess That Red. So this month's quizmaster is actually going to be Adam, the cycling defender. So Adam, you're going to read out some clues to us, talking about a Forest player of your choosing. And in that game, we need to try and guess who you're talking about. Over to you, Adam.
Okay. So, first clue. I once scored a hat-trick in an FA Cup quarter-final.
Rich. Nigel Jemson.
No. No. I'm not that old. I was once charged with misconduct by the FA, and I admitted to the charge. I was fined £2,500.
Stephen.
Oh.
Darius Henderson.
No.
Okay. Ooh, next guessing. Clue then.
I retired in the 1920 season at Tranmere Rovers.
I know it's not, but Eugene Daddy would be a great answer here.
If he retired in the 2020, I'd be very surprised.
He contributed as much after leaving Forest as he did when wearing a red shirt.
And scoring a hat-trick. Come on.
Let's move on to the next clue then.
Okay. I started my career at Manchester City. I thought that might be the one.
No, let's go on. I think we've got one more clue.
Forest paid £1.8 million for me from West Bromwich Albion.
Tom, it wasn't Ishmael Miller, was it?
It was indeed.
Hey!
Wow.
That was a tough one. Who did he score the hat-trick against then? And who for?
Bristol Rovers is who he scored it against.
In a quarter-final?
Yeah. Which was a strange one for me. I don't know how that came about, to be honest.
So for any fans of Kermode and Mayo's film review, you're now hearing Adam do what Mark Kermode does, which is listen to a man look stuff up on Google.
Was his misconduct charge against when he had a go at the fans against Coventry?
Yeah, it was his Twitter charge. I didn't mention what it was for, only because I remember that happening. And I was like, okay, I feel like they all remember that happening. So I thought, I won't clue what it was for. But yeah, it was for Twitter comments.
Yeah. And in fairness, Ishmael did contribute marginally more in a red shirt than Eugene Daddy.
I remember he used to have Porsche Panameras, the four-door saloon things. Mm-hmm. And on the back, you wouldn't do this to a car of that prestige. And he's put Ish. You know, there's like, you can get the letters and put them on your boot from like Halfords. And he put Ish on the back of it. And I'm like, why would you do that? Yeah, just getting personalised number plates or something like that. They just put Ish on it, right?
is another vintage signing in another vintage era for the club, wasn't it? Yes. And that actually brings us to the end of this month's podcast. So I want to say thank you to Stephen, to Adam, and to Tom, and also to Jeremy. Just as a reminder of our competition, if you can email us, forestramble@gmail.com, by 6 p.m. on Friday the 4th of March, and tell us, according to the UK official charts company, what was the highest chart position reached by Just Can't Get Enough by Depeche Mode. We've got a six-pointer coming up against Sheffield United and then the FA Cup tie against Huddersfield. So we'll be back with match reports. I think we're the only Forest podcast who do reports after every single match. So subscribe to us. All the links are available at linktree.com/Nottam_Forest. And thank you very much for joining us this time. And we hope to see you again soon. Okay, well, we need to end the discussion there, because now, to you listener, you will be familiar with this next thing. Oh, for God's sake.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.